Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am all right. How are you?
I'm very well. I'll be honest, I woke up this morning. You know when you wake up and you feel like the only way you could possibly have slept is if you slept in some sort of torture device where they've been mangling your back. And there's no serviceable explanation for why, but you wake up as if everything's all crunched up and broken. I have that feeling. But aside from that, I'm good.
Aside from that, you're all right. That's good. That's good. Apart from the searing, terrible pain, everything is okay.
Exactly. Just another day. Yeah. Just another day. What about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Had a nice weekend. Went to see Adam Buxton do his David Bowie thing last night here in Dublin, which was great.
Yes.
Fantastic show, yeah. So if anybody in the UK is around, I don't know if he's doing any more over there, but it's still a great show, and he's a very funny man. He is.
Very funny indeed.
Yes. So that was it. Apart from that, just the usual football, and some football over the weekend.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the thing about a Saturday lunchtime kickoff for an Arsenal game. It really feels like it means the weekend's kind of full, you know, from start to finish.
Yeah.
With football action. Yeah. Piping hot.
Yes. I watch quite a bit because I had a lot of work to do after the game on Saturday, and ended up watching the Liverpool game while I was tapping away on my computer. So watch them draw against Southampton. And watch Match of the Day the other night until such time as I sort of fell asleep and had to go to bed. So I have a little bit at the end of Match of the Day to pick up on. But, yeah, it was all good. It was all good.
I mean, was it all good? I mean, I have to say, you know, the Arsenal match, I didn't enjoy, 89 minutes of it particularly.
I get that. I'm in a weird place about this game and this result and the analysis of it, and I suppose in one way what it's done is it sort of sparked a bit of debate and a bit of discussion about the team, and there are various things obviously that we'll touch on as we go through the podcast. But let me put it to you like this. If I was to say to you, given our record at Old Trafford over the years, given the fact that it's an early kickoff on a Saturday morning, given the fact that we have some injuries to players like Hector Bellerin, Sandy Cazorla, Alexis Sanchez is coming back from a long trip away with Chile. He's got a hamstring strapped up to be Jesus. All of that, after an interlull where we've had just one training session, if before the game I had offered you a draw, would you have taken it?
Yes, probably. Yes, probably. And funnily enough, I thought it was a game that was always quite likely to be a draw because it struck me as one that really, you know, Mourinho wouldn't want to lose. I mean, I know he was very close to winning it, but, you know, he tends to sap his teams relatively conservatively in these big games. It felt like one that we might struggle to win. So I wasn't massively surprised by the actual end result and not massively disappointed by it. I think, I suppose it's about the broader context, isn't it? I think that the North London derby was similarly not a poor result, but a poor performance and a slightly underwhelming result. So I think kind of two of those in succession maybe has contributed to some of the gloom and over-analysis that's occurred off the back of this game.
Right, so it's more about performance than result. That's fair to say.
I think so. Yeah,
right.
I think so.
Right.
Because, you know, we're still unbeaten, aren't we?
Yeah. Apart from the opening day of the season.
Exactly, apart from that one.
That one.
But the draw at Old Trafford in isolation isn't a bad result.
True, true.
But of course, it's difficult to look at it in just isolation at this closer remove. I think in time, maybe we might look back and say, well, that was actually a very decent point. I think, you know, when you look at how the result came about, the Arsenal players, I think, are going to be much happier than the Manchester United players, and much more encouraged than the Manchester United players, despite the fact that United played much better than we did. They had more chances. I think they deserved their lead. Their goal came after a period of real pressure in the second half. You know, they turned the screw a little bit. There were a series of corners, and it felt like something was coming in the game. So for them to go 1-0 up, I think it was probably a reward for the way that they played. But then to lose 2 points to get dragged back very late in the game by Olivier Giroud's goal, I think is going to be quite damaging to them. Whereas for us, I think we can probably look at the circumstances and say perhaps the circumstances are a little bit mitigating. Like Old Trafford last year was such a disaster, and we talked about this last year, that I think there was probably some kind of, if not a hangover, you know, some fear, some trepidation. I think that was evident in the way the team was set up. But Phil Jones said after the game, it felt like we got slapped 6-0. That's what he said. And that's how it felt to the Manchester United players, whereas the Arsenal players are going to go, well, fuck, we played poorly today, and we still had enough in us to get a result, get a draw from that game. And I think if we're looking at the impact of the game on the two teams, I think it's much more positive for Arsenal, despite the fact that we really did play very poorly.
We did, yeah. And I think, you know, if you're looking for explanations to that, I think the international break's as good as any, really. I think we typically, you know, I feel like we often struggle for the same kind of fluency after the players go off all around the world and don't have any time training together. And I think that I saw a couple of United fans, friends of mine on, acquaintances, on my Twitter timeline, saying that describing the result as kind of sickening. And obviously, seeing fans of a rival club say things like that is always somewhat enriching and rewarding.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like something that would normally happen to us.
Yes, absolutely. We've been on the other end of it so many times that you can't do anything other than enjoy it. You know, and that's not to say you can't raise questions or have concerns, but I think, you know, when you get that late equalizer, it feels amazing. It's like a late winner, but you know how crushing it is when the shoe is on the other foot. It's just so disheartening, and you feel like, oh God, you know, what's wrong with us? Why? What's wrong with our mentality? I mean, I think if that had been Arsenal leading 1-0 and United scored in the last minute, you know, lots of questions would have been asked about Arsenal's mentality, about their ability to concentrate, to hang on. You know, are we resilient enough? All those things. I think people would have asked those questions. Maybe they are asking them about Manchester United. I don't know. I'm not reading around about what it's like from a Manchester United point of view. So yeah, on that, you know, I think we can take the positive. And of course, we keep that unbeaten run going, which I think is hugely important, even if we're not playing particularly well at the moment. The longer we go unbeaten, the more confidence, or the more difficult the players will feel it is to get beaten, you know, that they'll keep going. I mean, what do you think of, you know, it's a late goal from Giroud. There was a late goal against Southampton. There was a late goal against Burnley away from home. Is it a pattern? I mean, should on the one hand, should we be concerned that we need these late goals? Or on the other, should we be relatively happy that the team is capable of getting them when we need them?
I think it's a bit of both. It's always the same. Whenever you get a late goal, it's that thing of, you know, if it's happening more than once, it's kind of, well, you've got to praise the resilience of the team and the fact they keep going till the last minute. Mm. You've also got to have slightly worry about the fact that they end up in a position where they're desperate enough to have to do that. You know, if you think about our best performances, they tend to be ones where we get early goals and are able to go on and dominate games. But I do think that having gone behind relatively late, was it the 70th minute, something like that Juan Mata scored?
65 minutes, something like that. I think it was between 60 and 70 minutes anyway.
And there was kind of a little 15-minute spell after that where it looked, to be honest, more likely that United might double their advantage. As we entered the last 10 minutes, I couldn't really see anything coming. But the fact that we were able to put something together, I think owes something to the players, also something to the manager who, maybe having got his initial selection wrong, certainly improved things with his substitutions. And one thing I would say is that I saw a Spurs fan again on my social media.
An acquaintance. Absolutely. Another acquaintance.
Absolutely infuriated about the number of late goals Arsenal scored this season. So again, you know, I think it's something we should probably take a measure of satisfaction on, especially if it's pissing everyone else off.
Yeah, all right. So look, let's deal with that then. Let's deal with the team selection and the way that he set up the team to play at Old Trafford. You know, on the one hand, having seen what happened there last year, I guess a measure of caution was understandable. Trying to be a bit more defensively solid, trying to add some experience to the team. Alexis got the nod up front. Aaron Ramsey played on the left-hand side of midfield, and we had Mohamed Elneny and Francis Coquelin in the centre of midfield. Which bit do you think was, if we're talking about him getting it wrong, which bit was the most wrong for you?
Well, to be honest, I think that in terms of the way he played, Aaron Ramsey's deployment on the left seemed like a bit of a disaster. It's something I thought Arsene would do. I thought it was relatively logical. I know that it's not a position he knows well, but I could understand the rationale. But I thought it didn't pan out for Ramsey at all. I think it didn't have a good game. Nevertheless, that didn't feel like the area of the pitch where we failed to get a foothold. I think that was actually in the middle of the park itself. Mm. Now, whether that would have been solved by putting Ramsey in there, I think actually the omission of Xhaka was probably the most surprising decision Arsene made. And I actually think it might have been the one that gave us the most problems, because while Ramsey didn't perform well on the left, we sort of didn't even get that far most of the time.
Yeah.
I think maybe leaving Xhaka out was the one. I mean, you know, the absence of Cazorla was obviously talked about and has been talked about a lot in the last few weeks, and sadly looks like it's going to continue. And I do think that is kind of the problem to be solved. Without Cazorla, what is the midfield formula that works for us?
Yeah. I mean, because when you look at the passing statistics between Elneny and Coquelin, I think they've 88%, 93% pass completion. Elneny made maybe twice as many passes as Coquelin. You know, they're tidy. They're both tidy players on the ball. But I think the issue then is that when you need somebody to try and dissect the opposition or to try and find a way through, we don't have that in a central area. And I know Ramsey comes in to drift into the middle a little bit, but he was told, I guess, to stay left as much as possible. He had some work to do with Antonio Valencia, who was really hard to handle. He played extremely well, I thought. I always remember when they signed him from Wigan going, wow, they're buying a guy from Wigan and then they're going to play him at right back. But he's been really brilliant for them, and he is a tough player, a tough opponent, and he gave Ramsey and Monreal a difficult time. But yeah, I agree with you about the absence of Xhaka. I think he would have been somebody who could perhaps have made a bit of a difference to the way that we played, particularly in the second half when we really, really went off the boil. I thought the first half was relatively even. I know that Cech was the busier of the goalkeepers, of course. He made a couple of good saves. But, you know, it felt like a reasonably typical away-from-home performance against a big side where, okay, you've got the first 45 minutes under your belt. You've kept a clean sheet thus far. Now come out in the second half and be a little bit more expansive, perhaps a little bit more ambitious. But we just weren't able to do that with the personnel that we had. So I think it is the big question that he's got at the moment. What is the midfield combination that will really make this team tick? And I'm not sure if he knows.
Yeah, I mean, I think really we talk about the selection and what was the big selection. It's all the same, all part of the same question, really, because he had the option of putting Ramsey in the middle and opted to put him out on the left-hand side. I think, and no one's suggesting that Elneny and Coquelin can't pass the ball or aren't tidy players. I think they definitely are pretty efficient. But Santi Cazorla, you know, we wonder why we struggled to replace him, but he's such a special footballer. It's not just the range of passing he has, it's that ability he has to beat a man in the middle of the park, to get away from people in close, confined spaces and suddenly get you out of trouble and away on the counter-attack. That's a pretty unique skill set to replace, and not one, I suppose, not one that you can expect Arsenal to find a like-for-like replacement for. It's the same for if they lost Ozil. You know, there's not necessarily someone who you drop in and it's like, wow, we've solved it. So it's about finding a different dynamic, maybe.
Right. I mean,
maybe is more to do with getting Aaron Ramsey in a central place. He's such a different player to Cazorla, but he is still a quality player nonetheless. And maybe if you build around him, I don't know, maybe Austin's loath to do that, thinking that Cazorla might not be too far away. But it doesn't sound as if his return is particularly imminent.
No, he's gone off to see the specialist in Spain, who's worked with Pep Guardiola a lot at Barcelona, and Guardiola sent over Kevin De Bruyne and Vincent Kompany to this doctor this season to get them over some injury problems that they were having. Obviously, De Bruyne is back. Kompany, I think, was back at the weekend, but suffered another injury. I think it was a head injury, though.
Yeah, a head injury.
So nothing... too physical or to do with his previous problem. So hopefully he can get him back. But in the meantime, we have to find a way around it. So what do we do in that regard? I mean, it feels like he has to play either one of Coquelin and Elneny. Does it? Or can he do... Is Ramsey and Xhaka just too out there?
Too out there? Maybe.
Is it, though? Do you miss the ball winner? Do you miss... I mean... Coquelin does a job in terms of his defensive awareness and his tackling.
I thought he made some good tackles at Old Trafford.
So did I. There was one interception early on where he was really, really switched on. And I think for all the criticism that he gets, perhaps as somebody who stunts the way that we play, we do benefit from the way that he can win the ball back and the way that he tries to press, and also just the fact that there's somebody in the midfield willing to put the tackles in and is more or less defensively minded, even if it looks as if sometimes the instructions that he's got are to play higher up the pitch than we might like.
Yeah, I think they are. That's partly to free his partner, I suspect, so that they can, you know, distribute the ball with a bit more space. But I agree that he's important. I really feel like, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about this plenty this season, but it is interesting, is it not, how difficult Arsene Wenger seems to find it to accommodate Aaron Ramsey centrally, you know, the guy who that is his, you know, denoted position, it's where he wants to play. But if you think about it over the last 2 years, really, it's something that Arsene's been quite loath to do. And, I mean, that's really the key and the conundrum. As for Xhaka, I think Xhaka's got every right to feel a little bit disappointed not to have been in the starting 11. I thought he played pretty well in the last game at Spurs. And Arsene Wenger gave the explanation after the side I went with Coquelin, Elneny and Ramsey because of the physicality. You know, they're used to the physicality that Mourinho's teams have. But you would say that would be one of Xhaka's strong attributes, right? His physical capacity, his strength, his ability to deal with that kind of thing. So, yeah, a little bit surprising to see him left out. I don't think he's going to let go of playing Coquelin, which means it's down to someone else, really, to prove they can play alongside him. Elneny is the guy who's done that the most of the current options, and so seems to be getting the nod on that basis.
So, well, let's go back to Ramsey then. If he's not prepared to play Ramsey as a central midfield player, what does that say, or what does the future hold? I mean, I think, you know, you can be critical of Ramsey for his performance. I didn't think he played particularly well on Saturday, but then I don't think anybody did. I didn't think Ramsey was outstandingly worse than anybody else. But he's a guy who's being played out of position. We know he doesn't like playing in the wide areas. He's been asked to do a job there. It's not a job that's necessarily difficult, but it's not where he feels he can play his best football. Does he have to give him a run in the centre of midfield and see if it can work? And if not, if he's not prepared to play him as a central midfield player, well, is it time to consider other options?
Maybe. I mean, you know, as I say, it's been some time. I think the problem with Ramsey is that really Arsene Wenger would like to play him as a kind of number 10, as a kind of attacking midfielder who's kind of devoid of some of those defensive responsibilities. I think he thinks of him as a player who probably isn't conservative enough to play in that two in front of the back four. You know, although we play Coquelin and Cazorla there ordinarily, neither of those players is quite as prone to getting beyond the striker as Aaron Ramsey is. And I suspect that plays into Arsene Wenger's mind. He's got Ozil bombing on. He just doesn't know if he can afford to have Ramsey doing that too. As for what he should do about that, I don't know. Not play him on the left would be my conclusion after Saturday.
Or the right.
I mean, I haven't minded him on the right. I don't think he's been bad. I think his biggest problem there is that Theo Walcott's been really good. I mean, and that's, you know, not necessarily looking like an option. I mean, what would you do? Would you give him a run in the middle?
I think before you make your mind up on a player, you have to give him games in his favourite position. And then if he doesn't perform, then you can come to perhaps something closer to a definitive judgment about him. I mean, there's no question that he's a guy who is far from the player we would like him to be or the player that we thought he could be. But at the same time, there are circumstances, there are mitigating circumstances. He has been out injured. He's had injury-punctuated seasons. He's only, what was this, his third or fourth appearance of the season? So, you know, he's a guy who's probably still a little bit away from full match fitness. But I also think when you play a guy out of position, you have to look at his performance in that context as well. So if he can't do it in the center of midfield after getting a run of games in there, then, okay, we can call time or do whatever. But I would like to see him get a run of games in central midfield. The issue is, who is the right guy to partner him? And that's where that we've seen him with Coquelin. It doesn't really work. I don't know if we've seen him enough with Elneny, maybe a couple of times. What we haven't seen is Xhaka and Ramsey. But whether that has the defensive discipline or bite or aggression that Arsene Wenger wants or feels is really important now with the emergence of Coquelin over the last couple of seasons, I don't quite know. But maybe it's worth a try. Because it's something has to change in the centre of midfield for this team to work properly. And without, as you say, someone with the craft of Cazorla, who's more or less irreplaceable in terms of his own skill set, the two-footedness, you know, the way that he, the skills that he has, the ability to move the ball left or right because of how good he is with either foot, you know, that is more or less irreplaceable. And if that's such a key component of the way that you want your team to play, you can't look at what you've got and say, okay, well, that's how we do it. This is the solution. I think you've got to find a new way, and maybe Xhaka and Ramsey is the way. It might be a disaster, but maybe it's worth a try. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it could be worth a try. It's just a question of whether it's worth a try in a game as massive as the one at home to PSG. If Arsene Wenger will gamble that soon, you know.
Yeah. That's
tricky one.
It is a tricky one.
We'll come on to PSG, I guess. What did you make of the two goals, the United goal first? I mean, who did you hold accountable on that one from an Arsenal point of view?
Well, Theo Walcott held his hand up and said, "Blame me." For the goal. I know some people were pointing fingers at Elneny as well. I mean, Monreal was done a little bit too easily. Just switched off very slightly to let Herrera. I mean, I know Manchester United fans love Herrera, but he's just a divey bastard, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's a nightmare to play against. He's a real evil one.
Yeah. So that's probably why they like him, actually, yeah, because he's such a cunt. But, I mean, look, it was a well-worked goal. The finish was tidy from Mata. I did like the guys on Sky going, "Oh, that's such a difficult finish. Oh, my goodness. I can't tell you how difficult that is." It was a fucking square ball that he just had to side foot into the bottom corner of the net. What are they talking about? As if it was some kind of fucking piece of wonderful skill. I mean, it was a good finish, you know, but come on. This is a fucking professional football. So it was a good goal. From a United point of view, a sloppy one from an Arsenal point of view, and it just shows you that when you switch off defensively, then you know you can get punished very, very easily. And I think we did, a couple of players guilty of switching off, and United exploited that. But it also came, as I said, after a period of fairly intense United pressure that we couldn't. Again, you might ask if we had something better going on in midfield, might we have been able to, you know, just take the sting out of their period of pressure. But yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I basically agree. I thought Monreal switched off, and I thought probably Coquelin and Elneny could have been a bit sharper and more aware of Mata's run. I was slightly surprised by Theo Walcott sort of coming out and saying it's my fault. I mean, I could kind of see what he meant, but it kind of felt like a bit of an undue miracle. But if he's going to say, you know, if he's going to take responsibility for all sorts of defensive things, I guess that's something we've got to praise. It wasn't a great one for us to concede, but it had been coming, and I was thoroughly unsurprised when it hit the net. But I must say, at the other end of the field, I really enjoyed our goal.
Yes. Yes, I mean, like you said at the start, credit to the manager for the substitutions. There's some questions and stuff about substitutions, which we'll get to in the second part. But, you know, he did make the changes. I thought perhaps a little bit slow, but as I said, we'll come to that. Oxlade-Chamberlain at right back. It was very funny. Did you see the post-match interview with Mourinho?
I didn't actually, no.
He pretty much... blamed Rashford for that, because Oxlade-Chamberlain ghosted past him. You know, fresh legs. Rashford had been playing the whole game. And Mourinho said, yeah, it's normal. Chamberlain is a fresh guy, you know, against a guy who everybody says should be playing every minute of every game. And he's like, oh, you fucking cunt. He really is. But, I mean, what a great cross. And what a fantastic header from Olivier Giroud. I mean, the timing, the jump, everything was absolutely perfect. I think he gave a great big shout because there was Koscielny was going for it and then just ducked at the last minute. I don't know if you saw that, but
yeah,
it was a real thumping header. I love a header like that.
So do I. Yeah, keeper got no chance there. And first of all, brilliant piece of play from Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think putting him on at right back, you know, probably raised a few eyebrows, but worked a treat there. He sort of did what Valencia had been doing the whole game.
Yeah,
for United, and across. Really as good as the one he produced at Sunderland for Alexis Sanchez. So I think, you know, everyone's asking for Oxlade-Chamberlain to produce goals and assists, and that is what he's now doing.
Yeah.
As for Giroud, brilliant header. What did you make of the celebration, or lack thereof, from Giroud?
I thought it was a guy who was frustrated not to be starting the game.
Mm.
I know that there's... You know, maybe some part of him might have gone, well, we played poorly here, got out of jail a bit. I'm not going to run around and, you know, celebrate like I've scored the winner in an FA Cup final or something like that. But you would have thought that when you score a late goal like that, there's a lot to be really, really happy about. I don't know if you saw Alexis. He's, like, jumping all over his back. He couldn't be any happier. And Giroud is just sort of completely chilled. He's almost emotionless. And we know that he's an emotional guy. I've never seen him not celebrate a goal, ever.
Yeah, I don't think that thought of, oh, we didn't play particularly well, that feels a bit sort of considered for that moment when you've just scored a last-minute equaliser. Do you know what I mean? I think that it's sort of, I think it's more likely to be a frustration and, you know, maintain disappointment. I think he probably felt like he'd made his point. It certainly felt like that the way he powered that ball beyond the goalkeeper, that he was trying to make a point. Absolutely brilliant, towering header.
Yeah.
And it must be frustrating for him because he must sense... I mean, frankly, if Arsene Wenger's prepared to play Alexis when he's only got one hamstring,
it
tells you something, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not necessarily... a slight on Giroud that he's picked Alexis. I mean, I think we could all understand why he picked Alexis, because of the way that he's played this season and because of the way the team has played this season with Alexis at centre forward. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's contributing. Arsene Wenger said afterwards he's angry in a positive way, and then says, I'd say he's more determined than angry. He said, I have a lot of respect not only for his quality as a footballer, but for the man. The best answer he can give is always to show what he did today. So it was a message. You know, he's come off the bench, was it at Sunderland, and scored a couple of goals. This is another game where he's come off the bench and scored. I mean, I don't think he started a Premier League game yet this season. And we're, look, it's the 21st of November. I know he's had some injury issues, and that's been a frustration for him. But, you know, from going from the guy who was the... I guess, first-choice centre-forward pretty much week in, week out, to somebody who's now being viewed as perhaps a super sub or somebody who can only make an impact from the bench, it must be frustrating for him. And again, like you say, frustrating when Alexis is clearly not 100% fit, that he still didn't pick him. But, I mean, I wasn't surprised. I thought the fact that Giroud is capable of making an impact from the bench... it's obviously a positive thing for us, but not necessarily a positive thing for him when it comes to his chances of starting games. Because to have that option on the bench is a very good thing for the manager, because he knew that, well, look, if something goes wrong with Alexis or if something goes wrong with the game, I've got a guy who I can bring on here who is capable of getting me a goal. Whereas, you know, without having that option on the bench, you sort of slightly weaken your hand. So...
I saw a stat this morning, Olivier Giroud, now the highest goal scorer coming off the bench in Arsenal's Premier League history.
Yeah.
He's got 10 goals in the Premier League, having come on as a substitute.
Right.
Not a bad record. Would you hazard a guess at who's joint second with 9?
Coming off the bench.
Yeah.
In
the Premier League.
In the Premier League. In history.
Or yeah, going back to the start of the Premier League, yeah.
Robert Pires,
I think, is around about 7. With 9 in second place, you've got Kanu.
Oh, wow,
who is
yeah.
something of a super sub himself. And, somewhat surprisingly, Nicholas Bentner.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Isn't it interesting that... I wonder if that tells you something. I don't know. But those are three quite tall guys who are fairly decent in the air. I wonder if it tells you something about the way Arsenal approach games in the latter stages, or do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Is there something to be said for bringing on that kind of striker?
Sure, I mean, I think so, because, you know, when you do, I mean, look at what United did, which I thought was really interesting. Well, not interesting. They brought Mata off and Schneiderlin came on, and they immediately got 10, 11 men behind the ball. So they invited the pressure, and I know that that's the way that football goes, that when a team is seeking a goal in the last stages of a game, they tend to put pressure on, and as the team defending the lead, it's natural to sort of fall back and try and do that. But yeah, it does play into the hands of a team that's going to get, if you can get wide and get crosses in, this is what can happen, yeah. So it seems to sort of fit with the natural rhythm of a game or the way that a game like that is going, bringing on a guy like Giroud. So, look, credit to
certainly
him.
For Arsenal, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's that classic plan B thing, isn't it? Have you got a plan B? And the problem for him is that he's such a brilliant plan B that it's almost hard for him to reclaim his place as plan A, because he's doing quite so well in the opposite row.
All right, well, look, the league table. Chelsea went top with their win at the weekend. I've forgotten who they were playing.
Middlesbrough,
that's right.
Got draws against us and City, but quite against Chelsea. Chelsea feel almost... Diego Costa seems to be scoring every week. I'm infuriated by him. There you go.
Yes, he is. He's in good form, isn't he? I was listening to that one on the radio. Liverpool in second place on 27, Manchester City on 27. We're then in fourth on 25 points. Tottenham in fifth, 24 points.
Fourth, you say?
Fourth, yes, indeed. There's a long way to go, James. It's only one quarter of the season gone. There's still 75% of the games to go. But look, you know, it's tight. It's tied up there. There's only 3 points between us and Chelsea. There's a long way to go. And I think, you know, the fact that we've remained unbeaten since the opening day of the season is a positive thing. And even if the last couple of games haven't gone the way we would have liked, I think it's much more positive this season than it has been. You know, this is a bit of a dip in form, and hopefully we can turn that around on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you're absolutely right, because it has been a difficult run. And does it get a little bit easier for us in the Premier League now? I'm just thinking, you know, we've got Bournemouth at home, West Ham away, Stoke at home, Everton away, City away. I suppose it's not too easy, is it?
No, it's not, but it's a little less intimidating. I mean, West Ham have been poor this season. Bournemouth, you would fancy us to beat Bournemouth at home.
Stoke
at home. Yeah, exactly. You know, Stoke at home is a game that's traditionally one that we take maximum points from. Everton away, you know, Everton is a tricky place to go, but again, they have been not quite as good as everybody thought they were going to be under Ronald Koeman. Not that they've hit a roadblock, but, you know, yeah, it's certainly a little bit easier, but that's not to say it's going to be easy. So, you know, again, over the Christmas period, when these games come, you know, points and the table can move very rapidly because there's so many games happening so often. So
and we need... A win on Wednesday, do we really? I mean, I forget, actually. Do we need a win, or would a draw do us okay? I'm not sure. I need to look at the Champions League table.
If we drew 1-1, we would top the group.
Right.
I think.
Well, that's not too bad.
I think. No. It would depend then on the final games.
It would depend on the final games, of course, which our final game is a trip to Basel. Whereas PSG will be playing Ludogorets somewhere or other. So you would imagine that they would win that one.
Yeah, but if we drew 1-1 with PSG, that would mean that the two teams are level on head-to-head. And I think our goal difference is much better than theirs.
Because of
the
6-0.
So chances are we would. I think 1-1 would pretty much see us top the group unless PSG did something bananas in their final game. But we might take a question or two about the PSG game in the second part. Will we do that?
Sure. But if we win,
we definitely top the group.
Right. Lovely. That would be nice.
Mm. So we should just win. I think that's...
Okay, well, let's do that rather than aim for the 1-1.
Yeah, exactly. None of these permutations. Fuck that shit.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, we'll take a short break. We'll be back with questions and more in part two right after this.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and of course on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearsblog, which is 100% real news. None of that fake bullshit Facebook news that's going on. It's completely real, all of it.
100% genuine.
Absolutely. Even the pictures of monsters that live under my bed, they're there. Let's, before we do some questions, just remind people that if you want to come to the Arscast Extra live this Thursday at the Garage in Highbury in Islington, there are just a few tickets left. So go to myticket.co.uk and search for Arscast. And you can join myself and James and Amy Lawrence and Philippe Auclair for an evening of Arsenal chat and waffle and all the rest. It'll be good fun.
And it's live.
It's live. yeah, so that's it. Check it out.
Yeah. Be lovely. Be lovely. Be great to see a few familiar faces there.
And even some new faces, James. New faces.
We can finally figure out who all these people asking us questions on Twitter actually are.
Yes.
Very exciting indeed.
Very exciting.
Speaking of questions, have you got one for us?
Yes, I have got one.
Great.
Seeing as we are playing PSG on Wednesday in the Champions League in this all crucial clash against PSG in the Champions League on Wednesday, which is in Champions League, it's taking place on Wednesday. Yeah, it's against PSG. Just in case,
crucial clash.
Very very important Champions League game on Wednesday
against PSG.
Anyway, a number of people have asked about the starting lineup at Funky Fred, and also at Clydeen MacDonald want to know, should we rest Alexis Sanchez
for PSG and play Olivier Giroud instead, seeing as Alexis clearly is not fully fit?
Yeah, lots of people asking about that, weren't there? Should we and will we are probably different questions, aren't they? Arsene Wenger, I mean, I liked this question from Alex Gale, just said, is Arsene going to break Alexis again? Because of referencing last year, I guess, when he was kind of played into the ground almost and did his hamstring then. I think, I mean, look, Olivier Giroud's done pretty much all he can, hasn't he, in terms of coming off the bench and making an impact. I think he's certainly made his case. Will it be in Arsene's mind what happened with Giroud against PSG last time out, where he managed to get himself sent off? I don't know. I suspect that will be an isolated incident. I think if Alexis can play, he'll probably play, to be honest. I don't think Arsene will shift it up.
I tend to disagree. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Giroud got a start for this game. I think he might want to... Yeah, I think he might want to, A, be a little bit cautious with Alexis, because when you saw the bandages that he's got around his hamstring, it's clear that there's a problem there. And I understood the selection of him against Manchester United for all the reasons that we've spoken about. But I think there has to be, at some point, a little bit of caution exercised over a player who's got to be really important for us over the course of the season. So I wonder, depending on what the reaction to playing against United was, if there's any doubt about that, I think he might want to tap into this frustrated, this angry, this non-celebrating Giroud, a guy who was always happy with life, even when he was flicking his fingers in dismay and despair. When he scored, it brought him joy, and now it's not bringing him any joy. And that's a sad thing. And I think Arsene Wenger might want to just sort of go, okay, well, here you go. Have a go from the start against these French people that got you sent off last time. And, you know, maybe try and tap into that frustration and get a performance out of him. Because, you know, he's not just a guy who's good as a substitute. He is a guy who can score goals when he starts as well. So I think there's a little bit of a danger of overlooking the goals that he has scored for us and the way that we have played very well at times when he has started up top. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Giroud got a start.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, he started the last Champions League game away to Ludogorets. Maybe he's kind of the David Ospina of the attacking realm. when you say you'd start Giroud, I don't think that's a ludicrous suggestion by any means, but what I'd be intrigued to know is whether you would play Alexis from the left, or would you leave Alexis out entirely?
Again, it would depend on the medical side of things and how fit he is. I mean, I would have no problem with playing Alexis on the left if he's fit enough to do that. I suppose the worry that you might have then is if you're playing Alexis from the start and Giroud from the start without Lucas Perez, without Danny Welbeck, you're leaving yourself light if you need a goal from somewhere, if you need to change things around. We don't necessarily have anyone who can do that. I mean, who is there from an attacking point of view that you could bring on to change? Alex Iwobi, maybe, if he doesn't start. After that, we're very light. So I wonder if that might play into his thinking a bit. But, if he's fit enough, I'd give Giroud a game up front, put Alexis on the left for this one.
Okay. And while we're at it, what would you do with the rest of the team? Would you keep...
I'm not being paid £8 million to make these fucking decisions, James.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, we've got to fill the podcast.
What would I do? Okay, obviously, Ospina's going to play in goal. Koscielny, Mustafi, I think he'll stick with Monreal. Right back might give him a decision to make. I thought Carl Jenkinson did all right. He looked a little bit nervy at times, a little bit scared at times, but, you know, some of his defensive work was really quite good. He seems the most natural fit.
What's the decision? Who else could you go for in there?
Would he consider Matthew Debuchy, who came through, you know, a reserve game last week and scored against Spurs, would he consider him fit enough or ready enough to play in a Champions League game of this magnitude? I'm not sure that...
I think it's too soon.
I think it probably is. I think it probably is. But I also think that if he can get himself fit and focused, and get his head right that Debushi is our best backup to Hector Bellerin. Midfield, I think it'll be Coquelin and Xhaka.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because sort of freshness from Xhaka, the fact that he didn't play at the weekend.
Yeah. Ramsey maybe could be the guy who can change the rhythm of a game from the bench if we need it, if you're starting Alexis and Giroud. So, I think it could be Coquelin and Xhaka, Walcott on the right, Alexis or Iwobi on the left, Giroud up front, and obviously Mesut Ozil in the centre.
Okay, strong team. Still a strong team, even with those changes. I think it'll be something... Yeah, I think it'll be similar. I have a slight hunch that he would still keep Alexis up top, just because, I don't know, I think that's the shape of the team that he desires. But you're kind of convincing me on the Giroud thing. I think, you know, when you talk about it, I can see that happening too. But if you are going to play Giroud, I wonder if you might then take the opportunity to put Alexis on the bench, have him as the guy who can change it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Much depends on
the fitness.
Midfield options.
Yeah, and the fitness. If there's real danger of damaging his hamstring, then I think you just have to be cautious. But the importance of the game is also a factor when the manager picks his team. You know, can I get a guy through this game? And if he misses the next two, then, you know, maybe they're easier games for him to miss. So it's all part of the juggling act. So there we go.
Well, look, this is a kind of a selection question too. It's from Akshat Bhatnagar. And they ask, why is Xhaka not starting? He can create. He's shown he can defend well in the North London derby. Surely he's adapted to the EPL now.
Yeah, I mean...
It is a bit weird, right? Like, when Arsene Wenger spent that amount of money on a central midfield player, and you know, we don't necessarily know who signed off and quite how much money it was, but Arsene's usually pretty key on these things. That's sort of second most he's ever spent on a footballer, behind Mesut Ozil, pretty much. So you would have thought that guy would be an absolutely nailed-on starter, and a similar feat to Mustafi's played in every single game. So... At this stage of the season, we're into November now. It's not the opening weeks anymore. Mm. It is a little bit odd that Xhaka's not been able to nail down a place, is it?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think we spoke before the North London derby and said that the manager's team selection in that game would give us a clue as to what he was thinking about Xhaka, or whether he had the requisite faith in him. And of course he picked him, and he started, and he played pretty well. He was probably Arsenal's best player on the day. So I was a little bit surprised, I have to say, that he didn't start at Old Trafford. And I think maybe with hindsight, the manager would do it differently. He really wanted to be secure. He wanted to have two defensive midfielders in there. I don't think he can really play Xhaka on the left. You know, he's not that mobile to play on the left-hand side, whereas Ramsey is a much more mobile player. So I do wonder maybe if by leaving him out, it illustrates how important he might be or how important he should be to the team. So maybe that's part of it. I don't quite know. Maybe there's the lesson to be learned. It's difficult. Obviously, we don't know. He's spent a lot of money on him. He's talked up his qualities a lot. Maybe there was some worry about him disciplinary away from home against Manchester United. I mean, he came on, he was on for, 10 minutes and picked up a yellow card. So, you know, I think he's, a booking away now from a suspension. Has he got 4 yellow cards? I must just check this out. Yellow cards. No, he's got 3. So he got 3 yellow cards and a red card to his name. So maybe there was something in that. But I think he's got to start him against PSG. He's got to find out who's going to partner him, because we need somebody who can pick those passes from deep, because otherwise the midfield just becomes entirely too predictable and we just don't attack the same way that we want to be able to attack.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And I think, you know, as for why he's not playing, we touched on it in the first part of the show, but it's a lot about chemistry, isn't it? It's a lot about the fact that it's not a question of him operating on his own. Arsene Wenger's got to find someone who's a cohesive partner for him. And that hasn't quite happened yet. You know, I think we talk about the wealth of midfield options at our disposal, and that's all very well and good. But what the real trick is to kind of separate those into pairs who can dovetail effectively.
Yeah.
And that's the part that we haven't quite yet mastered.
Okay. Here's a question from Magnus Holmberg, who wants to know, was Monreal lucky and should it have been a penalty or was it a dive?
Well, I think he was lucky, actually. I think he was lucky. I think if you put your arm across a player like that, you're asking for trouble. So I was surprised when a penalty wasn't given there.
Let me say,
delighted. Pleasantly surprised. You too?
Oh, absolutely. I was just waiting for the whistle to go. It looked... I mean, I know it was a bit of a dive and it was a bit of a coming together of the two players. It would have been a very soft penalty, but at Old Trafford, Arsenal away from home, like 99% of the time, that would have been a penalty to Manchester United. It was almost like the one that Martin Keown conceded against Solskjaer in the Invincible season. One of those where you sort of lean into the player and tumble and what have you. Now, I think Valencia was light on his feet a bit more than Monreal caused him to fall down. But just when you looked at it in real time and you looked at the angle the referee had, I was absolutely astonished that they didn't give a penalty. I was really, really surprised.
It was Forlan, by the way, not Solskjaer.
Oh, Forlan, yeah.
Evil, cunty substitute striker for Manchester United. I could not. And to be honest, I don't know if you were watching on Sky, but
yeah.
I was flabbergasted that like the pundits were saying that they thought the referee got it right. I was like, I can't. I mean, you know, I could see their case, but I thought Gary Neville would surely see that as a penalty for United. Mm. I couldn't believe it. But there you go. Absolutely got away with that one. And, you know, I think what you've got to look at it is if it happened at the other end, I think you'd be screaming for a penalty, wouldn't you?
Sure. Absolutely. What did you make
for
of...
a rugby tackle.
What did you make of Darmian getting away with that tackle on Jenkinson? Was that a second that yellow for you?
I think it might have been. I mean, that was kind of, for me, I think he could have been booked before he was actually booked.
Yeah, there was a foul on Walcott, which was really, really cynical, which should have been a booking, and then he got one a few minutes later.
His actual first booking wasn't a particularly bad one, as I recall, I remember thinking, well, you're lucky you got away with one earlier than that. I think he could have gone. I know it shouldn't matter, but I genuinely think that the home-away dynamic really does influence things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first booking of the game. Who was it? It was an Arsenal player. Alexis, maybe?
Yeah.
And it was literally 2 minutes after a worse challenge had gone in from a United player that had gone unpunished. And, you know, it's that thing where I do think sometimes the crowd and the ambience can have a sway on that sort of thing. So Darmian, I thought, was a little bit lucky. But after the Monreal thing, I wasn't in any mood to gripe about it.
All right. I think it's your question.
Probably is my question. Let's have a look. This is from Richard Franklin, who's at The Real Bearski on Twitter. And they ask, is Iwobi's loss of form and lack of replacement the biggest reason for our change in performances?
No, I don't think so. But obviously when Iwobi is playing well, I think he adds something to the team that none of the other wide players really do. I feel like with Iwobi, maybe I'm alone here, but I feel like to a certain extent he's playing within himself. Like there should be just a bit more aggression or self-confidence about him. I think he's still...
Is that his youth, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's his youth and relative inexperience and the fact that he feels maybe a little bit deferential. You know, he seems a very grounded, humble young man, and he's going, well, here I am in the Arsenal starting 11. And I know he's been in the team for quite a while now, but, you know, it takes a while to really, really feel part of it. So I think sometimes there's just a little bit of timidity to the way that he plays, where if he was a bit more forceful, he would produce a lot more. But I don't think that's the main reason why the performances haven't been as good of late. I mean, I think if you have him contributing, it would help, but there are other factors. You know, the quality of the opposition has changed. over the last number of weeks as well. When you've got a North London derby, which is always a game with a very special, intense pressure, and then you're going away to Old Trafford after the interlull, etc., etc. I don't think his absence is that, but I think it's been interesting that he took him out of the firing line a little bit. I had sort of thought that he might start him at Old Trafford, but obviously went a different way in terms of how he viewed his team. Yeah,
he's got a chance against PSG, I guess, hasn't he? He's got a chance of playing that game.
Sure, sure. But I mean, we did speak over the last couple of weeks about maybe just taking him out of the firing line, give him a couple of games from the bench, maybe just let him refocus, take some of the pressure off him, and send him back in again with, I won't say the hunger built up, but when you've been out of the team for a couple of weeks, then you're just sort of, you redouble your efforts or you're refocused on the job that you're supposed to do. So yeah, I mean, he hasn't played quite as well as he did towards the start of the season and at times last season, but I feel like he's a guy who's capable of making a step forward. And it'll be like a kick. It'll be like a turbo boost kind of a thing. It won't be, I don't think it'll be slow. I think something will happen with Iwobi that will sort of propel him forward. So whether that's a big goal or a big performance in a big game, I'm not quite sure, but I feel like that's the next thing that's going to happen to him. And after that, I think he'll really kick on.
Yeah, I mean, a goal wouldn't go amiss, would it?
No.
A goal could certainly be the thing. Yeah, if he comes on to get the winner against PSG, maybe that'll be the catalytic moment right there.
All right, this one comes from a couple of questions here, sort of related. This one from Fred Thurbin at RLF86. And he says, people talk about early subs. How early can you make a substitution? Is there anything to be gained from halftime substitutions? And at John O'Louis, who is at Layout or Die on Twitter, says, I was crying from minute 35. Oh, to move Alexis to the left. Not actually crying. He wasn't crying. I was crying from minute 35. Sorry, Jono. Crying from minute 35 to move Alexis to the left and bring Giroud on. Why was this obvious solution not sought in time?
Interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I have never seen, to my knowledge, Arsene Wenger make a strategic substitution in the first half of a game.
Mm.
I mean, it's an unusual thing anyway in football, but there are some managers who do it. It always feels a little bit bombastic when they do, a little bit like it's sort of, you know, self-consciously, like, look at me, what a strategist I am.
Yeah.
Mourinho is someone who's done it on more than one occasion.
And didn't he do it to Matic or somebody like that? Or he put Matic on as a substitute
possibly,
and then took him off? And Matic said, like, the damage that did to him in terms of his own confidence, etc., was considerable. Right? I think there's something humiliating when a player is taken off in the first half. And I don't think there was any Arsenal player who was playing that badly, or the team wasn't playing that badly in the first half, that you could necessarily justify a first half substitution.
No, I think that's true. And I also think Arsene Wenger, you know, even a half-time change is very rare, isn't it, for him? And I think it's because he likes to give the players he's picked the opportunity to change the game. Now, saying that, were you frustrated watching the match on Saturday? Did you feel like changes ought to have been made earlier?
Yes. As United built up that bit of pressure, I was going, we really need to do something to change the dynamic in the team. It was clear, you know, 20 minutes into the second half that we just weren't clicking at all, that we weren't attacking in any significant way, we weren't threatening in any real way, and it felt like something would have or should have changed. So I would have had Giroud on a little bit earlier, and I think it still took him 5 or 6 minutes after the goal went in to put on Giroud. I'm just going to check back on the live blog here because I've obviously got it here. So goal United in the 69th minute. And then, yeah, okay, so it was like 5 minutes after Elneny came off and Giroud came on. So
I think what I really felt about that as well, Giroud came on and that was something, but after that point, I felt like we were waiting quite a lot longer for other introductions. You know, Xhaka came on and then Oxlade-Chamberlain. That was not for Oxlade-Chamberlain was in the last 10 minutes, was it?
Xhaka came on in the 80th minute for Coquelin, and Oxlade-Chamberlain came on in the 84th minute for Carl Jenkinson.
So they weren't given a huge amount of time to influence the game. I think there was an extent to which when the game was at 0-0, Arsenal probably felt that that wasn't a terrible result, and it almost felt as if he was sort of looking to what we have, we hold. And I think he had a lot of his better defensive players out on the pitch, in fact, rather than on the substitute's
bench. And if we can nick a goal, then great. You know, if not, then let's keep the clean sheet,
So I think he didn't want to destabilise what he perceived as a relatively solid defensive setup with Coquelin and Elneny in front of the back four. But, you know, it's a really tricky one because it's not a great game on which to criticise the manager for his substitutions, is it, when one crosses for another one to score?
It's the timing of them rather than the... I guess the timing of them more than the acts themselves.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all know Arsene Wenger doesn't make a change until the 67th minute of a game. You know, that's the earliest he'll consider doing it, really. But I think... it's not like we were 2-0 down and the game was gone and, you know, we needed desperately to change things. We weren't playing well, but it was still very finely balanced. So I can understand him being conservative, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think he was content enough with the clean sheet that we kept up to that point. And maybe didn't want to destabilize it. And didn't want to necessarily throw on an attacker and then lose a goal. And I don't know. I felt just in general, in terms of our own performance, in terms of his team selection, in terms of the substitutions, you could sense the caution from Arsene Wenger that he wasn't necessarily going out all out to try and win this game. It was a game that he much more didn't want to lose than to win.
Well, look, I mean, the million-dollar question comes from Michael Ross Adamson on Facebook, who says, why are we always shit at Old Trafford? Regardless of results, we always play badly.
I think there's clearly a psychological issue at play there. There are some grounds that traditionally you don't do very well on. I suppose, you know, if you were to go to the Nou Camp every season, you'd probably be shit there too. I'm not saying, you know, there have been some really disheartening displays at Old Trafford over the last couple of years in particular. So if you're playing one of Ferguson's best teams and you have a difficult day at Old Trafford, well, okay, we understand that because he was a brilliant manager and his teams were excellent and won the title more often than anyone else. But when you're facing a David Moyes team that's absolute cack and you end up losing, or a Van Gaal team like last season that was absolute cack and you end up losing, then it goes beyond the quality of the opposition for me. And I think that there is something of a psychological barrier, whether it's with the players, whether it's with just the manager, or a combination of those things. I think that's playing a part, to be perfectly honest. I don't know how you get over that other than win a game, but maybe...
Or change all the players and manager.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the other way around. But yeah, I think there are just some grounds where you're not very good at, and it creates a weight. I mean, it's like Stoke. Like our record away at Stoke is terrible. But Stoke are shit. Let's face it.
Yeah.
You know, they're even with, good little players that they've got right now, they're still not a very good side, but our record at Stoke is more to do with the weight of history than it is with the quality of the opposition. So why are we so shit at Old Trafford? Because we are. And how do we fix that? Your guess is as good as mine.
Maybe taking some confidence from fluking a 1-1 draw, even though we play really poorly.
Mm.
Maybe that could be a turning point, that last-minute equaliser. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, yeah, we definitely do struggle there. It was amazing, really, quite how kind of tepid our performance was.
Yeah. You know? I mean, is that a worry? Because, you know, the North London derby was quite passive. We were, you know, we weren't as aggressive as you would like an Arsenal team to be in the North London derby. And again, at Old Trafford, I don't think there was any lack of effort, but we did feel a little bit inhibited in terms of the way that we played and the way that we competed physically. It felt a little bit not quite as strong as it could have been.
Yeah, I think, well, look, I mean, they're not great performances, really, in either game. It's a real toss-up, isn't it? Because it's the performance versus the result. The results are fairly decent. The performance is less so. Maybe that bit of conservatism, that bit of is helping us. You know, maybe we're playing with our heads a bit more instead of getting carried away and chasing a game and losing it.
Sure.
So, you know, there's two sides to every coin. I think that the PSG game is a big one now. You know, we had three massive games in a row. We drew with Spurs, which was a little bit disappointing because we were the home side. But a point at Old Trafford's a decent one. If we can round it off with a win against Paris Saint-Germain, you'd have to look at this period in November and say we've actually come out of it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah.
It's a big if, though, you know.
It is a big if. I mean, PSG have been in pretty good form, have they? I don't know what they've been doing. Did they lose some players to injury this weekend? I think I saw some people talking on Twitter about Angel Di Maria picking up a hamstring injury.
Well, that's always welcome.
Yeah.
They beat Nantes 2-0 on Saturday.
Anyone could do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, we got lucky in that game, didn't we? It was not a dissimilar performance to the United one. Went behind. Probably we were much worse, actually, defensively. Cavani could have had about 5-6 goals.
Jesus.
Yeah. But we snatched a late-ish equaliser from Alexis Sanchez. So, yeah, we'll need to be better than we were at the Parc des Princes, certainly.
Yeah, we need a big, big, big European night, I think.
Yeah, why not? That'd be lovely.
Mm.
You'll be there.
I will be there. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It should be a great game. Okay, here's a question from Tom, who is Biggers in Paris. He said, after Ollie G's bullet header at the weekend, what are your five favourite headers for Arsenal?
Ooh, great question. Favourite headers? Well, let's just start listing them and then see if we can get
to five. Well, here's one that sticks in my mind. I know he's not the most popular player of all time.
I know what it's going to be.
Do you? You think it's David Platt against Manchester United?
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Oh, no. When you said not most popular player of all time, I was convinced it was going to be Bentner against Spurs.
No, that was a great one. I love that one where he comes on as a substitute. But I'm talking about the brilliant 3-2 game at Highbury in the double winning season when we were 2-0 up, weren't we? Anelka and Vieira, and then Sheringham, I think, scored maybe two goals.
I think he did score twice.
Did score twice. And then we had a corner. I think it was taken by a left footer. Maybe it was... Was it Nigel Winterburn? I can't remember.
I don't know, because it was an outswinger.
It was an outswinger. And David Platt, with his big moon-shaped fucking forehead, that header was just, like, unbelievable. Into the top corner. Yeah, looping, but spinning and twirling into the top corner. That was a great header. And the Bentner one is fantastic as well, yeah. What else have we got in terms of headers?
Do you know what? He didn't score many, but I think fondly of Thierry Henry's against Manchester United at the Emirates Stadium. Was that the first season of the Emirates? Do you remember that?
That's right. A Boué cross. Boué's cross. And
that was a late winner, was it not?
It was, and that was the weird game when Van Persie, in celebrating that goal, like broke his metatarsal, I think. And was out for ages and ages. Maybe it happened during the game, but I think the story was that he'd done it while celebrating. Yeah.
What was he doing?
He was running after Henri, and then Henri sort of turned, and he turned, and something happened. I don't know.
Well, they never got on, did they? So Henri probably tripped him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of others now. There must have been some good headers scored by defenders down the years, you know, the likes of Tony Adams, Sol Campbell, they must have contributed.
Let me think. Mertesacker scored a great one, didn't he, against Tottenham? Yeah, that was a brilliant
that was his
one.
First goal for Arsenal, I think. Bakary Sagna against Spurs.
Oh yeah, I love that goal. I fucking love that. I love how what that goal did to the team that day. That was the ultimate fuck this, I'm not having this. We're 2-0 down to Spurs at home. Boom! Get the fuck in there now. You, the rest of you cunts, wake up and win. And they did. That was one of the 5-2s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first 5-2. We were 2-0 down. Mm. And he just transformed the game, really. The sheer force of the goal seemed to sort of unsettle Spurs. I mean, Giroud's contributed plenty.
Yeah. He's probably the best player in the air in the Premier League. I mean, who else is scoring those headers?
I mean, I think the only one who really can rival him is if he was fit ever, Andy Carroll, potentially.
Yeah.
But he's not fit ever. So yeah,
apart from when we face West Ham.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll be fit next week or the week after when we play them, and then he'll be out for another 18 months.
Injury. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, Giroud has scored some great headers. There was one against Newcastle. Was that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good header.
That was a pretty brilliant one. And even the one he scored the other week against Sunderland.
I liked that. That had something off the plat to it, I guess, in some respects.
Yeah.
The way he sort of met that.
He guided it.
So there we go. There's some pretty decent ones on that list.
We've forgotten plenty, so no doubt people will tweet them at us. When's the last time we scored a diving header?
I always think of, do you know diving headers? I always think of Ashley Cole against Dynamo Kiev.
Mm.
Do you remember to get out of the group stage in the Champions
League?
And
there was, what, about 3 minutes left in the game, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
So I can't remember. I love a diving header. I always feel like diving headers should be like goal and a half. Should get an extra point for diving headers.
I agree with you.
So, yeah, if anyone can think of a good diving header, please let us know.
They're always welcome. Yeah, that Ashley Cole one definitely was a big moment.
Mm.
That was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, I love a headed goal.
So do I.
Sort of, you know, as Arsenal fans, we don't necessarily get too many of them. Am I right in hearing that we haven't conceded one yet this season in the Premier League?
That is what they said just as Manchester United stood over the free kick towards the end that Rooney was taking.
I was like, for fuck's sake.
Why did you say that? That's Martin Tyler. You know, Arsenal have not conceded a header goal, and then now they have! You fucker. He's trying to set up stuff for himself.
I know, of course he is. But, I mean, yeah, that feels remarkable, really.
Mm. All right, final one. This comes from Bar Emo Amma on Facebook. And he says, can you people call me to come and play for defence? I can bench anybody in Arsenal defence.
He might have a chance with Jenkinson. can we call him? I mean,
I don't think
if we had his number, we would.
We would, yeah.
But we don't have the authority, really, do we?
No, we can't necessarily call you and say, you're in, mate. You're starting on Wednesday against PSG.
It's all got to go through the manager, really.
Mm.
But he's probably on Facebook.
Arsene Wenger, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm sure he's probably using a slightly different name, you know, Arsenal Wenger or something, so no one will find him. But if what's the guy's name who's messaged in?
Bar Emo Amma.
Okay, well, Bar Emo Amma. If you get in touch with Arsene, he's your guy, really.
Yeah.
I'd love to think that any of our discussions about the starting lineup held any sway whatsoever, but sadly, they don't.
They don't. No, he basically decides. So, yeah, just follow him on Facebook. Send him some weird messages. Pictures of your body, perhaps.
And tell him you're a right back. That is the area at the moment. If you want to get a game, that's where that, you know. If Mathieu Debuchy's been, called back in from the cold, it tells you that we're in some need back there.
We certainly are. All right, well, look, we're going to leave it there, but we will see you, hopefully, on Thursday at the Garage in Highbury and Islington. Remember, tickets, very few of them left. You can get them from myticket.co.uk. Just search for Arscast. You can get your tickets there. We hope to see you there on Thursday for what we hope as well will be a celebratory show after a win against PSG when Bar Emo Amma scores the winning goal, having rampaged down the right-hand side.
A rewarding run from right back.
Yeah, exactly, like Cafu or someone like that. So we'll do that. We'll see you on Thursday. That show will be recorded live, and that will be the Arsecast for Friday. So that will be up and about on Friday morning for you. So if you can't make the show, you can hear it on Friday morning. So until then, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.